In the town of Blakeslee, Arkansas, there was a house that everyone knew was haunted. It was an old, neglected house on a side street in the oldest part of town. Sometimes, the most wonderful smells issued from the house and filled the street with the heavenly odor of fresh-baked bread. Whenever that happened, people would say that the old house must have been a bakery, or at the very least, the former home of a fabulous baker. Sometimes, the neighbors would hear the sound of music and laughter coming from the empty house, as if there was a wonderful party in full swing. Whenever that happened, the neighbors would look at each other and say, "It sounds like a nice party. I wish I was invited." Whatever ghosts haunted the old house, they were friendly ghosts. But even the friendliest spirits are scary, and no one ever actually went inside the house. With the possible exception of a young boy being dared by his playmates, no one ever even stepped foot on the front porch. One day, a man moved into town from a distant city. He saw the empty house and asked the neighbors, who owned it? He was told the owner was unknown, and that the property could be bought for back taxes. No one told the stranger about the house's curious history. The man went to City Hall and bought the property. Soon after moving in, however, strange things began to happen. Odd noises in the night, weird lights drifting from room to room, the smell of baking from a cold kitchen, and, worst of all, the sound of a party when the new owners were trying to sleep. After a few days, the man's wife declared that she could no longer live in so haunted a place, and moved out, taking the children with her. Before long, the man gave up as well. He was forced to find another place to live, but he was angry at the neighbors for not warning him about the house's reputation. He was angry at the town board for not telling him that the house was occupied by ghosts. In fact, he was angry at everyone in town for treating him so badly. So he went to the mayor to complain and see if he could get his money back. The mayor refused, saying he never misrepresented the house as anything it was not. "Just because a house is haunted," he said, "doesn't mean you can't live there. The trick is making friends with the ghosts, learning to get along with them." So the man went to the pastor of the local church and told him his problem. The pastor said, "You've been in town for a month, and only now, when you're having a problem, do you come and see me? Well, sit down and tell me what's on your mind." So the man sat and told the pastor about the haunted house he'd bought. The pastor in this village was considered a wise man, set in his ways, conservative in his manners and beliefs. He wasn't open to new ideas, but reluctantly, he agreed to visit the house and see exactly what the man was talking about. The pastor accompanied the man to the house. As they approached the block the house was on, the pastor smelled a delicious smell. "What's that wonderful smell?" he asked. "It's the ghost baking bread," the man replied. When they got closer, the pastor stopped to listen. He turned to the man and inquired, "I hear music. Is someone having a party?" "It's the ghosts having a party," replied the man. They went inside and looked around the empty house. The pastor sat at a table while the man looked for something to serve his guest. He found an old bottle of whiskey and poured a glass for the pastor and one for himself. They toasted each other's health and drank. "So you moved from Little Rock to Blakeslee?" said the pastor. "My parents live in Little Rock. I know the town well." The man, it turned out, knew some of the pastor's relatives. They talked and joked about those things they had in common and felt a friendship growing. They were having such a pleasant time that before they knew it, 3 hours had passed. They were gone so long, the man's wife began to get nervous. "He went to the pastor's house hours ago," she said to herself. "Maybe the ghosts got him." So she picked herself up and went to the pastor's house and introduced herself to the pastor's wife. Together, they pooled their misgivings about ghosts and their worries about their husbands and went to the haunted house together. They peeked in the windows and saw the two men sitting at a table, drinking, laughing, and having a good time. The wives joined their husbands and found that they had much to talk about. The laughing and talking attracted the neighbors, who stopped by and introduced themselves. Pretty soon, the kitchen was filled with the smell of cooking. A neighbor brought his fiddle and another brought his guitar, and just like that, there was a party. The old house filled with real smells and real laughter. It was alive again, and that, of course, was what it wanted all along. From that day to this, the old house came alive again, and its ghosts were laid to rest, never to be seen or heard of again. The end. I live on a small farm far out in the country. Every year, my dad puts out scarecrows in our fields because he thinks they're effective in not only keeping the crows out, but evil spirits as well. I guess he's a little superstitious. The scarecrows he sets out are the same ones year after year. After so much wear and tear, they were showing their age. This October started out just like any other October. The weather was turning cool, and the leaves were beginning to change into brilliant orange and yellow colors. One Saturday, us kids got together and decided to make a new scarecrow. Being creative, we gathered our supplies and got to work. This scarecrow was going to be different. This was my special design. I wanted a creepy scarecrow, much scarier than the others. Hours later, we finished up. Indeed, it was the ugliest, most frightening scarecrow I've ever seen. I was so proud. Mom called us for supper, so we planted the scarecrow out in the cornfield, where I could see it from my bedroom window. Not giving it any more thought, we went in and ate. Soon, the wind picked up, and it began lightning. No storm was forecasted, but it looked like we were in for a rough night. Light rain began falling as I went to bed. I was worried about my new scarecrow, so I peeked out the window. What I saw shocked me. He was there all right, but not where we had placed him. It appeared to me that he was several feet to the right. Puzzled, I stood at the window and watched intently. The lightning was bright, and every time it flashed, I could see the scarecrow. The problem was, it looked as if he was moving when the sky was dark, only to turn up in another spot when the sky lit up. Thinking that I must be imagining things, I put my pajamas on and went to bed. Later on, a loud crack of thunder woke me up. By now, the rain was pounding down, making it difficult to see out my window. I slipped on my shoes and snuck outside to check on my scarecrow. Not sure where he was, I walked around in the thunderstorm, half blinded by the cold, stinging rain. Clumsily, I stumbled over a fallen branch and fell down in a patch of mud. When I looked up, there was my scarecrow glaring down at me. His eyes were huge and glowing red. I couldn't pick myself up fast enough. I ran screaming to the house and never looked back. After tossing and turning the rest of the night, I woke up to bright sunshine and the smell of bacon. Not wanting to tell my parents what had happened, I sat quietly and ate breakfast. Anxious and apprehensive, I then went outside to look around. My dad was already looking for damage to the buildings, but I was looking for my scarecrow. I could see the other scarecrows, all in their usual places, but my scarecrow was nowhere to be found. Full of confusion, I began crying. Not because of losing the scarecrow, but because of pure, unadulterated fear. My father told me that he probably blew away and would be discovered in a field during harvest. I knew better. Somehow, some way, that scarecrow came alive. How, I don't know. 10 years later. Years have passed, and to this day, I have never seen my scarecrow again. What happened that stormy night? Do scarecrows really keep out evil spirits, or can they be possessed by one? I don't live on that farm anymore, but I've never ventured outside during a thunderstorm again. The end. There was once a woman who lived by herself in a quaint house in the country. Her husband had passed away about 5 years back, and she was planning on moving soon. One day, while packing up some of her husband's things, she noticed that the temperature dropped really low. She walked down the hall to check the thermostat, but when she got there, it showed no difference in temperature. She thought about it, but figured that it must be broken. She decided that she would call someone the next day to fix it. When she passed the mirror on the wall on her way back, she thought she saw a movement of shadows in the reflection. Then the temperature suddenly returned to normal, and when she looked back at the mirror, nothing was there. She shrugged and went back to packing. A couple of days later, the temperature dropped again. Again, the woman went to the thermostat, and again it showed no change. She remembered that she had forgotten to call someone to repair it. She promised herself that she would call after her show on TV that she had been watching. When she passed the mirror, she again saw the movement of shadows. She stopped. In the reflection, she saw a shadow. Nothing but a shadow. Slightly translucent, but visible. The shape was indescribable. It changed shape, like water flowing, about the size of a tall person. It stepped out from the wall behind the woman, but when she turned around to face it, there was nothing there. Now she was scared. She began to tremble. Slowly, she turned back to the mirror. The figure was still there, and closer. She screamed out, "Help!" But no one came. Closer and closer it came. A few weeks later, a friend of the woman's stopped by to say hello. She knocked and knocked, but there was no answer. The next day, a police officer came out to investigate, but he found nothing but a few empty boxes and the TV on. It was put down as an unsolved case. The house was soon cleaned out and put out on the market for sale. For many years, the house was empty, wet with all the stories going around about it. But one day, a small family consisting of a mother, father, and daughter moved from the city into the house. All was well until one day, the temperature dropped in the house. The daughter went to her parents and asked them what happened. They said they didn't know, and they went to the thermostat to see. It showed no change in temperature. They decided to call someone. The daughter went back to playing with her dolls in her room. Had she looked up into the mirror, she would have seen a shadow peeking from behind the reflection of her bed. But just then, her parents came in to tell her that someone was coming the next day to fix the thermostat, and that she'll have to deal with it for a while. But when they finished saying this, the temperature went back to normal. The parents said, "Never mind." A few weeks later, the temperature dropped again. The girl was brushing her hair at the time, in front of her mirror. She saw the shadow behind the reflection as it started to creep towards her. She screamed. Her parents came in asking what happened. She told them, but they didn't believe her. She tried to make them believe her, but it was of no use. They took her to a psychologist to get her help. When she came home, she believed it was all a figment of her imagination. She probably would have kept believing that, except that, about a year later, the temperature dropped once again. The girl was by herself because her parents had gone to the theater and left her alone since she was 13 years old. She was experimenting with makeup at the time, in front of her mother's mirror. She stared in terror as the thing crept out from behind the bed. She trembled, but didn't call out. She knew no one would come. And now, as it had done before, the thing came closer and closer, closer and closer. When the girl's parents came home, they found the house empty. Their daughter was nowhere to be found. The police report said another unsolved case. The house still stands to this day, and it's still on the market if you want to buy it. It's a bargain. The end. About 5 years ago, I lived downtown in a major city in the US. I've always been a night person, so I would often find myself bored after my roommate, who was decidedly not a night person, went to sleep. To pass the time, I used to go for long walks and spend the time thinking. I spent 4 years like that, walking alone at night, and never once had a reason to feel afraid. I always used to joke with my roommate that even the drug dealers in the city were polite. But all of that changed in just a few minutes of one evening. It was a Wednesday, somewhere between 1 and 2 in the morning, and I was walking near a police-patrolled park quite a ways from my apartment. It was a quiet night, even for a weeknight, with very little traffic and almost no one on foot. The park, as it was most nights, was completely empty. I turned down a short side street in order to loop back to my apartment when I first noticed him. At the far end of the street, on my side, was the silhouette of a man dancing. It was a strange dance, similar to a waltz, but he finished each box with an odd forward stride. I guess you could say he was dance walking, headed straight for me. Deciding he was probably drunk, I stepped as close as I could to the road to give him the majority of the sidewalk to pass me by. The closer he got, the more I realized how gracefully he was moving. He was very tall and lanky, and wearing an old suit. He danced closer still, until I could make out his face. His eyes were open, wide and wild, head tilted back slightly, looking off at the sky. His mouth was formed in a painfully wide cartoon of a smile. Between the eyes and the smile, I decided to cross the street before he danced any closer. I took my eyes off him to cross the empty street. As I reached the other side, I glanced back, and then stopped dead in my tracks. He had stopped dancing and was standing with one foot in the street, perfectly parallel to me. He was facing me, but still looking skyward, smile still wide on his lips. I was completely and utterly unnerved by this. I started walking again, but kept my eyes on the man. He didn't move. Once I had put about half a block between us, I turned away from him for a moment to watch the sidewalk in front of me. The street and sidewalk ahead of me were completely empty. Still unnerved, I looked back to where he had been standing to find him gone. For the briefest of moments, I felt relieved, until I noticed him. He had crossed the street and was now slightly crouched down. I couldn't tell for sure due to the distance and the shadows, but I was certain he was facing me. I had looked away from him for no more than 10 seconds, so it was clear that he had moved fast. I was so shocked that I stood there for some time, staring at him. And then he started moving toward me again. He took giant, exaggerated, tiptoed steps, as if he were a cartoon character sneaking up on someone. Except he was moving very, very quickly. I'd like to say at this point I ran away or pulled out my pepper spray or my cell phone or anything at all, but I didn't. I just stood there, completely frozen as the smiling man crept toward me. And then he stopped again, about a car length away from me, still smiling a smile, still looking to the sky. When I finally found my voice, I blurted out the first thing that came to mind. What I meant to ask was, "What do you want?" in an angry, commanding tone. What came out was a whimper. Regardless of whether or not humans can smell fear, they can certainly hear it. I heard it in my own voice, and that only made me more afraid. But he didn't react to it at all. He just stood there, smiling. And then, after what felt like forever, he turned around, very slowly, and started dance walking away. Just like that. Not wanting to turn my back to him again, I just watched him go until he was far enough away to almost be out of sight. And then I realized something. He wasn't moving away anymore, nor was he dancing. I watched in horror as the distant shape of him grew larger and larger. He was coming back my way, and this time, he was running. I ran too. I ran until I was off the side road and back onto a better lit road with sparse traffic. Looking behind me then, he was nowhere to be found. The rest of the way home, I kept glancing over my shoulder, always expecting to see his stupid smile, but he was never there. I lived in that city for 6 months after that night, and I never went out for another walk. There was something about his face that always haunted me. He didn't look drunk, he didn't look high. He looked completely and utterly insane. And that's a very, very scary thing to see. The end. The shortcut through the cornfield tempts you as you're walking home. The clouds above keep the moon concealed as you enter the swaying corn alone. The corn grows tall and thick, my friend. The path you chose is muddy. It grows in rows without scope or end, and in the dark you hurry. You don't see the standing forms as you pass them on your way. They stand still amongst the swaying corn, which hides their pallor and decay. Hundreds gather in this field tonight, though you see none at all. Yet still you look around in fright, but the corn grows too thick, too tall. You tell yourself as you continue through, it's merely the rustling of leaves. But they see you, and they hear you, and they might not let you leave.